And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 Podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm in Margaret River.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I am in my living room in a very stormy...
Oh, that doesn't sound like much fun.
No, I tell you what, I watched the qualifying with one eye open, half passed out on the couch because we did not sleep on Friday night a single wink because the wind was that strong. It was shaking the house. It was... So I'm glad I managed to stay awake through the qualifying, but it's been rough with the storms and with Formula One, to be honest, too.
Yeah, it has been a rough weekend. So we've just had the Singapore Grand Prix and, my God, where do we even start?
Three words.
Let's just rip the Band-Aid off.
Three words.
Oh, three words. Okay, three words.
Well, okay. Do you know what? I thought about this in the bathroom this morning, and because I'm so churned up, the only things that I think of to say for my three words were veritable snooze fest.
But that is not what I was expecting you to say. I'm going to say Hansel papaya rules. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah. So, okay, Band-Aid's off, Di.
Band-Aid's off. I've ripped it off. Let's just dive straight in. So at the Singapore Grand Prix, if you're listening to this later on and you may have forgotten what's happened, in quali we had...
George Russell, pole position.
Amazing.
Fabulous.
In the Mercedes. Fantastic. Max Verstappen in second place. Then the second row of the grid, we had Oscar Piastri in third.
Fabulous.
Amazing. Kimi Antonelli in the other Mercedes in fourth. Amazing. Russell Norris in fifth. Then in sixth, we had Lewis Hamilton in the Ferrari. Seventh, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. Isaac Hadjar in the Racing Bulls. Ollie Bearman in the Haas. And Fernando Alonso, the old boy, in the top 10. So that rounded out the top 10 of qualifying.
It was quite nice. It was quite a nice top 10.
A nice top 10. Of course, the two Williams were disqualified for a rear, what do you call it?
Wing. The DRS.
Yeah, rear wing. I nearly got... Spoiler in my head. It's not a spoiler. The rear wing was... The gap was slightly too big or... something to that effect, so that they were disqualified from quali as they started at the back of the grid, which is why there's no Williams in the top 10. So, lap one, corner one, Lando Norris gets his elbows out. He passes Kimi Antonelli straight from the get-go and then is on a charge to go for Max, and as a result, bumps, nudges, knocks, hits Oscar Piastri out of the way, and Oscar almost went into the wall. So Lando made up two places. It put Oscar behind Lando in fourth position, and Oscar jumped on the team radio straight away and said, so are we cool with Lando just barging me out of the way like that? And the team did not interfere or say anything. The FIA stewards found it that there was no further action. It was a lap one incident. And
which it was. Look, it was a lap one incident. Absolutely. But.
Yeah, there's no denying that. But their teammates, and the number one rule of papaya rules is don't crash into each other.
Papaya rules.
Don't crash into each other. Mm-hmm. That's what the number one. You're free to race, but don't crash into each other. Mm-hmm. Now, was that nudge considered a crash? It was pretty aggressive on Lando's part, and Oscar was seriously unhappy about it and asked a couple of times on the radio about it, and the team said, focus on the job at hand. We'll discuss this after the race. You know, there's still valuable points to be gained. And, you know, Oscar was –
he was
– cool, calm and collected Oscar, no more. He was pretty fuming, and I think he had every right to be, because that team interferes when it suits them. And
yes.
That's how it feels.
And see, this is my biggest issue, right? If they just hadn't have done, if they hadn't have called for Oscar to give that place back to Lando when Lando had a terrible pit stop. Yeah.
Yeah, in Monza, yeah.
Then we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it like this, because the whole reason behind asking Oscar to give that place back is fairness, right? And it'll come back to you. It'll come back to you somehow. And he had that card up his sleeve to play. There was that he's got this ace up his sleeve now where he's like, remember that time I gave Norris back the place because of the pit stop? Well, they've just completely denied him that. And do you know what? I really, really hope there is a point in the next six races where something happens that Piastri loses the lead and Norris takes the lead and Oscar says, you've got to give it back. You've got to give it back. And I really hope, because that's going to hurt more than giving him back that third position. That's going to hurt a lot more to give him back a win than it is to give him back that third position. And whether or not he should have been given that position back, I'm not even counting that at the moment. I'm counting it on the fact that they have called to swap positions around when it has suited them for Lando, but they've not done that.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
I mean, I think every Australian fan is up in arms at the moment about this, all the comments I've seen on posts online about it. And I've seen some other posts which are a bit rubbish, actually, that were saying Oscar snubbed the team celebration on the podium, you know, when they had all the McLaren team on the podium after the race because they won the Constructors' Championship as a result of the points they scored in Singapore. Oscar didn't snub the celebrations. He was in the media pen doing his job, answering questions about the crapiola situation that he was put in that the team did nothing about.
Yeah.
That made me really irritated. It's like, don't go saying Oscar snubbed the team celebrations. But I did see, and you might have seen this as well, a video of Oscar getting ready to get out of the car at the end of the race, where he finished fourth, by the way, and Lando did finish third. And Oscar was getting ready to get out of the car and Zach came on the team radio and was saying,
"Oh yeah,
that's another Constructors' Championship. Yeah, congratulations." And Oscar cut the team radio.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's real or not real, or whether somebody has spiced that up. You know, you don't know for sure, but, you know, if I was Oscar, if I was Mark Webber, his manager, I would be pretty angry about that. You know, they did the whole analysis on the Sky Pad that Anthony Davidson takes you through almost frame by frame how that incident occurred. I don't know if they do the same thing on F1 TV.
Yeah, I switched it off, to be honest, because I was so fuming. I didn't watch the after celebrate. I just couldn't. So I'm going to be completely honest there. This is how churned up I get about this whole situation right now with the McLaren team. I can't deal. So I switched it off. But yes, continue on.
Well, I did watch it and it did calm me down a little, but I still think that McLaren have created this situation that it's not the papaya rules, it's the implementation of it seemingly just from one way.
Yes.
Just from one side.
Yes. I think from here on in, he's not going to play by the rules if he gets told.
Hope so.
And again, okay, so one of the papaya rules, as you explained to me when I was going off my head yesterday in messages, is that the driver that's in front in that particular race gets preference over when they pit, which I also think is a really terrible rule. Because McLaren came on the radio and said, we want to pit Oscar first because we want to cover off Leclerc. Do that. Why is that up to why is that up to Norris?
The drivers. Yeah, it should be a strategy call,
not
a driver call. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. They're taking this fairness thing in some cases to the nth degree, and then in other cases they're ignoring it altogether. So the inconsistency is what is making fans like you and I and probably, you know, 20 million other Australian Formula One fans just ropeable with McLaren at the moment.
I honestly
don't even care that they won the Constructors' Championship right now because I'm just too
annoyed. It was so overshadowed by this incident, because I think it was picked up by not just Australian fans, right? So when I was listening, when it happened and this was actually very interesting considering how biased the Sky News or the Sky Feed team are, who also do the Formula One TV.
They were pretty good this weekend, I've got to say. Yep. on that.
They were very fair. And I can't remember which commentator it was, but he was like, you know, I've been in that situation where I've had to move over and handed over a win to his teammate, and all he got in return was the third position. And, you know, he was basically talking about it from a driver's point of view, where everything that's happened in McLaren's, or with McLaren and this, you know, their two drivers up until now, has kind of put all these ideas and thoughts and kind of rage, I guess, into the drivers about this fairness or inconsistency of fairness and or non-fairness. And he was like, yeah, Oscar's got every right to be angry and to ask for that position back. And I was like, see, like, coming from a driver, you've got to, and if you
was it Jolly and Palmer? He seems to be on Team Oscar a lot.
I think it might have been.
Which I like.
Mm.
Yeah.
But it was interesting, because if you take away all of the racing stuff, because this isn't about the racing anymore. Well, it is about the racing, but when they're making decisions like this to hand back positions because of a bad pit stop, which then impact things further down the line, when you start doing that, yeah, if you take away the racing and look at just that, you've got to keep it consistent, and it's not fair.
It's not fair. It's not fair. As I started saying, frame by frame, they were going through the incident and they were showing that Max Verstappen, who was ahead, and also George Russell, who was ahead, they showed their racing line that they took on that first corner. And then they showed how Oscar looked into his left mirror, obviously because Lando was there, and moved over a little bit to hold his position, and he wasn't on the racing line, which is more to the right. Their argument was that Oscar is a little bit to blame because he's off the racing line. Lando was, you know, making a charge. They showed the gap where there was a gap where Lando was going up after Max, passing Oscar to go up after Max, and then hit the back of Max and then hit the side of Oscar.
Mm.
But Oscar was quite rightly saying that if he's got to hit his teammate to avoid a collision, a bigger collision with Max, that's just the worst excuse in the world. Like, he shouldn't be making that charge if it's going to result in a collision either with Max or with Oscar.
Yeah, very true. Very true. And it would be a different story if there was runoff area.
There was a wall. He was so close to the wall. Like, Oscar could have just ended it all. And that would have been, I mean, he did well. And then, unlucky this time around, Oscar had the slow pit stop with McLaren. It was a 5-second pit stop.
That's where I was going with this, right? With the asking the lead driver whether or not they should have pitted him. Lando was like, yeah, that's fine. Actually, no. Because he knew the last time that happened, actually, it's happened the last two races.
Yeah, that's right.
Norris has pitted second both of those times, and he got the slower, not so good pit stop. So he has about turned on his decision very quickly and said, no, don't pit me, because he knew. And it happened again. We got a 5-second pit stop for Piastri because of it. But as you said, it should be a strategy call. It should have been a strategy call, are you okay with us doing this?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They should just do the best for the team. It's like, okay, Oscar, you know, Lando's got good time. His tyres are seemingly okay. If we pit Oscar now, we can cover off Leclerc. Let's do that. And just tell Norris. You don't ask him. Yes, the papaya rules have got everybody a bit perplexed. And Zach and Andrea, the team principal and CEO, after the race, stood their ground and just said, we've always done things this way. We're very lucky. We've got two drivers that cooperate.
Yeah.
Let's just see what happens now that the constructors' title is all wrapped up,
which
I think is going to be elbows out, and it should be.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the constructors' title got completely overshadowed. So, yes, well done to McLaren for retaining that constructors' title and for wrapping that up, tying that up.
Congratulations.
You know, that's wonderful. I feel like they need to be more decisive as a team. They're basically stepping back from it and being like, fairness. And in doing this, I said this last week, the week before, I think I've said it a few times, in doing this and in behaving the way that they're doing, they are overtly favouring Norris, but they haven't said that he is their favourite for the championship. But everyone knows it, because of the way that they're behaving. If they just came out and said, we're backing Norris for this championship, even though that's the bad decision because he's 22 points behind is 22 points yeah. behind Oscar. But if they had just come out and said that, then everyone would be like, all right, whatever, bad decision, but that's what you're doing. But because they haven't come out and said that, yet all of their actions line up with them backing Norris as their world champion, it's just gross. It's really gross. Like,
It's upsetting a lot of Formula One fans, and it's upsetting all of the Australian fans and all of the Oscar Piastri fans out there. I just hope that Oscar's in it for himself now. Like, yeah. he's played the team game. He's been very, very cooperative with the team. He's towed the party line. He's not spoken out of turn. And I think now's the time that he needs to think. Mm-hmm. This is his shot. It could be his one shot at being a world drivers champion next year. All the regulations are going to change, and that McLaren might be a tractor. You just
exactly.
don't know.
Exactly.
So this is his one chance, and he's just got to go for it. Lando is the McLaren baby. Zach will never let him leave the team. So yeah. Lando will be there. And I think Oscar needs to win the championship and then start shopping around.
I reckon Webber will have exactly the same sentiments for Piastri now. He'll just say, go for it. Who are you looking out for now? You got to look out for yourself now.
Exactly.
But in all this talk, again, some of the things that were overshadowed in the race, which really upset me, and I guess this tends to happen when you've got a race leader that's just out in front, you know, nowhere to be seen. George Russell won in Singapore. Hey, 5 seconds clear of Verstappen in the end, you know?
Verstappen. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that Mercedes was on rails all weekend, and
I reckon
not all weekend, all qualifying and the race.
I reckon George had something really spicy there in Singapore. He was eating some spicy meals because there was something in his pants. He was just flying that entire time.
Well, even Kimi Antonelli and the other Mercedes had pace. That track just suited that car this year. And George got a brilliant result, and well done to him. He was really dominant, and you know, he's the kind of driver that, like, he's just always there, isn't he? He's just always there in the top 1, 2, 3, 4, you know.
He's very quiet.
But not someone that, yeah, he's not really in the limelight that, I guess, because there's not any controversy surrounding him. I mean, the only controversial thing at the moment is that his contract hasn't been signed, and they're obviously just negotiating the last final things in the contract, but you know, both parties are saying it's going to happen.
Yeah. I can't see Mercedes dropping either of their lineup at the moment, because obviously Kimi Antonelli is their little...
Well, they've confirmed him. I'm sure he's been confirmed.
Yeah.
Next year, Kimi.
But you know, he's their little prodigy. They want to bring him up in the team, aka Norris, aka Hamilton. You know, they want this long-term driver to come up through the ranks with them, aka Verstappen, you know.
They've confirmed Kimi. Now with George, it just seems like a matter of dotting I's, crossing T's, and just getting the last little bits. I have heard a rumour that it was something to do with sponsor and media commitments. I think George wanted less than what there was in the contract.
Last week when we were talking about our predictions, I actually said, I can see Russell coming in third. I was wrong. I still had him on the podium, but I was wrong. He came in first, and I was really, really, really happy for him, because he's a quiet assassin in the back there. Like you say, there's not that much talk about him. They don't really hype him up. There's more talk about Leclerc than there is Russell. And so it was just really nice to see him pull that one out of the bag, and very happy for Antonelli after having quite a tough season. I did hear the commentators say that Antonelli seems to have good weeks when George is doing really well as well. So the car's really suiting the track. But when the car's a little bit difficult and not so agreeable, he has a lot of trouble compared to George. And that just shows, I guess, the experience levels, George's familiarity with the car compared to Antonelli. I think, you know, give him a year or two and he'll be amazing. I mean, look at Oscar in his third year with McLaren.
Yeah, exactly. Leading the World Drivers' Championship.
Mm.
Well, let's just run through the top 10 of the race quickly. So obviously George took the top step of the podium in the Mercedes. So that was a really dominant, yeah, it was great. Great for him. And Max finished second. Max struggled with his car
a lot
all weekend. A lot. Yeah, but managed to to hold on to second, despite having Lando Norris tucked in behind him, half a second behind him for maybe 8-10 laps towards the end of the race, and Lando couldn't pass him.
Which was because of a very uncharacteristic lock-up into a turn where he had to slow right down so he didn't go into the wall and he could turn and take off. So he lost a lot of time there, but still managed to pull it out bag somehow. So,
Yeah, keep Lando in third. Oscar Piastri finished in fourth. And in the last couple of laps of the race, there was only 2 seconds between him and Lando, which would have been the difference of a decent pit stop rather than the 5 second pit stop. Oscar finished in fourth, Kimi Antonelli in fifth, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari in sixth, then Fernando Alonso in the Aston Martin. We've got to talk about him. Lewis Hamilton in eighth in the other Ferrari, Ollie Bearman in ninth in the Haas, and Carlos Sainz, climbed from the back of the grid up to 10th to take out points, which is that little sparkles is working its magic, right? Yeah.
Damn right, Di. Good on Carlos. It's been 2 wonderful weeks for him.
Awesome weeks.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump in. Fernando Alonso, he gets my vote for radio of the race, which was just...
Radio of the year, I reckon.
I just love that if you talk to me every lap, I'm disconnecting the radio, which I just thought was gold from him. He had a massively slow pit stop as well. He had a nine-second pit stop. So that was a major. You don't see those major stuff-ups like 9 seconds very often.
Mm.
But despite the 9-second pit stop, he still climbed 3 places and finished in 7th overall. The other thing is that Fernando Alonso got driver of the day. So.
Which also got buried. I think there was another really great overtake by, can't remember who it was, but they just came zooming through like high speed on a corner and it was just, it might have been Bearman.
Yeah, it was Bearman. Yeah, it was.
Bearman came through.
Yeah, it was a really ballsy overtake. Yeah, it was.
Bearman's been doing real well in that Haas. So all props to him. I just thought was hilarious that I needed to mention was Martin Brundle just absolutely ballsing up his interview on the grid walk with Lewis Capaldi. So
it's hilarious. And Lewis went to shake his hand and Martin had already turned his back and it was so awkward. Oh,
it's such a good thing. Yeah, Lewis is like pretty much a comedian as well, because not only did Martin walk up and start talking to him, and him turn around and be like, I'm not Lewis, I'm his brother.
It was his brother.
Don't understand how Martin managed to balls that up as badly as he did. Like, he was obviously just mortified that he had identified the wrong person as Lewis Capaldi, one of the world's biggest, I won't say pop star, but he's huge. Some of his songs have had billions of listens on Spotify. Anyway, he managed to misidentify him. And then poor...
Well, his brother does look like him, to be fair. So there is a resemblance.
Oh, boy, yeah.
I think there's a resemblance.
If you don't know who Lewis is, then maybe you would, make that.
He looks like an ordinary bloke that you'd walk past in Woolworths, honestly.
Oh, 100%.
He does not look like a rock star or superstar by any stretch of the imagination.
He is the most laid-back celebrity in the world. He's so funny. And it was funny because Lewis was trying to make it all cool. He was like, no, I'm the plus one. My brother's into the Formula One stuff. Like, it's just, I'm here with him.
It was just one of those awkward moments.
I just think if you're going to do the grid walk and speak to celebrities, you probably should do your homework a little bit better.
I'm going to defend Martin Brundle because I thought that Lewis's brother and Lewis had pretty strong resemblance to each other. If I've been shown a photo, this is who you got to speak to in the grid walk, which is what probably happened.
Yes.
You can see why he might have gotten confused with that. So I'm going to defend Martin.
I'm a big Lewis Capaldi fan, so I never would have made that mistake. But to be fair, about 95% of the celebrities that they have on the grid walk, I would not know who they were or what they did or why they were there. So to be fair, he's done a better job than I probably would have
Lewis was there because he was performing after the Grand Prix, and Elton John was also performing after the race. God, what a lineup.
Crowded House performed as well. We did start talking about the entertainment in Singapore after the race, so we can probably talk a little bit about Singapore, hey? It's somewhere that we're both familiar with, obviously being from Perth. It's both a major hub for us if we're traveling to onwards to any other destination, but it's also a favourite holiday spot of people from Perth. So we've both been... Yeah,
I've been through the airport lots of times. I've actually don't even know how many I've lost count.
World's best airport.
I saw another travel writer, a friend of ours, Julia D'Arazio, who did a whole series about Singapore Airport. And she went up onto the roof and she had a sauna and she had a swim in the pool. And I didn't even know that was there.
Yeah. There's a butterfly garden. There's all sorts.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I wanted to go to the waterfall. What are they
the
called?
The
The
Changi Jewel. Jewel, yeah.
But you have to actually go out of customs and then come back in again. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that's very easy to do, and only really worth it if you've got minimum 4-hour layover.
It's a really cool place to be though, because there's so many good places to eat and there's lots of shopping and there's like a sky trampoline near the waterfall as well. So you can kind of like bounce through the canopy of a rainforest.
Cool.
It's amazing.
All those times through Singapore, I've only been to the city once for a city break. Not enough time, so I would really like to go back again. And one of the most fun things that I did, I was with my dear old mum, who at the time was 76, and we did a Singapore sidecar Vespa tour where we were both in the sidecar of a vintage Vespa. So someone was riding the Vespa and then we sat in the sidecar and we did a city tour. And we actually rode on the Grand Prix track because we were there in September and they were building the track.
Mm-hmm.
So that was awesome fun.
We did something like we must have done a similar course around the city. It was with Aspen. It was the first time he'd been to Singapore. So we did a bicycle tour around Singapore to get the lay of the land and see what we wanted to go back and see. And we did must have done a very similar course because we also did the Grand Prix track. But it's a really, really good way to kind of work out what you want to go back and see, where the difference, like, because there are quite specific sections of the city that it's segmented into.
Lots of different hubs and neighborhoods and stuff.
Exactly. And we got such a wonderful recommendation from the tour guide as well. Espen was a little bit tentative about eating the street food in Singapore. He's not as familiar with Southeast Asian and Asian countries as what I am because, you know, he's from Norway. So he was a little bit tentative, but the tour guide was like, this is one of the best places to eat hawker's meals. And it was at the Lau Pa Sat Hawker Center, which is not too far from the Marina Bay Sands kind of area. And it's one of the more famous ones. Singapore, it's easy to Google a lot of the hubs. So everyone knows about Marina Bay Sands, which is the big boat-shaped pool on top of the Three Towers and the luxury shopping precinct. And then you've got the gardens by the bay just behind that, which is the big towers and botanical gardens. Everyone knows about Orchard Road.
The super trees, those trees that light up. We did
exactly.
That. And
it's amazing.
Yeah. There's like a boardwalk that goes around between them all, like, that's really high up. And you have to pre-book tickets for that. There were so many tourists standing around at the time when Mum and I just rocked up. Because I had data on my phone, I just jumped online and booked tickets to start in 10 minutes time. So that was fine. But a lot of other tourists were just standing around sort of scratching their head because you can only get tickets online. If they didn't have data on their phone, then
they didn't know that.
So, and that was brilliant. That was really nice. They have, you know, all the lights all change colours of these giant sort of magical super trees, and it's synced to music. It's very cool.
It's a little bit like a futuristic what are the blue characters and the trees?
Avatar.
Yeah. It's like a bit of a futuristic Avatar. There are wonderful independent boutiques. Haji Lane is a really good one for that. It's very colourful. It's very bright. It's not far from Little India, which is another hub. If you want great food, Little India is fabulous. And I remember some of my favourite things I've ever bought fashion-wise I had got in Singapore. The loudest and proudest are the Diors, the Guccis, that sort of thing. And Singapore is a very wealthy country. They cater to very wealthy travelers. And obviously the more money you have, the more visible you are, blah, blah, blah. So you see a lot of that. But there is also the real humble side of Singapore, and that's in your hawker's food. You know, the last time we were there, I think a pizza cost us something like $50 or $60. And I was just like, why are we eating pizza? This is ridiculous. We should go to the hawkers. And we went to the hawkers, which is what they call their street food, you know, centers. And Espen was like, this food is so good and so cheap. Why have we not been eating here? And I was like, I can tell you why we've not been eating here, but okay, I'll let that slide. And just, it is so much, it's so cheap. This is where your everyday locals go and eat. It is also where your loaded locals go and eat. But
yeah, because the food is so good and cheap and
yeah,
just because the high turnover of what everything's so fresh. They also have amazing bakeries in Singapore. That was something that surprised me. The bakeries were next level, like, freaking awesome.
Before I forget to mention these things, one of the other things that I really loved doing in Singapore is going to the Modern Art Museum. So again, it's kind of not far from where Marina Bay Sands is. It's kind of just on the other side of the shopping center. And it felt so Singapore, because Singapore's so modern and high tech in a lot of ways. Obviously there's all the culture and the tradition as well. But all that modern and high tech, it just really lent itself to the Modern Art Museum. And it was just one of the most fantastic, fantastic displays. So I'd highly recommend going to see that too. Great, because it's got good aircon as well.
You do need that relief, because Singapore can be really steamy hot, which was the day where we trudged through the Singapore Botanic Gardens, which are absolutely stunningly beautiful. But we nearly died of heat stroke. It was a really long day of walking and not enough water and not enough shade, but really beautiful. The orchid garden was absolutely stunning and definitely an attraction to not miss in Singapore. It's kind of amazing that in such a thriving metropolis, such a big modern city, you've got this huge, it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, the Botanic Garden. So
they do such, that it's such a fabulous city for, like, the way that they manage to incorporate nature into the city, just the way that they're so very conscious of making sure that everything's still green is phenomenal. Yeah, phenomenal.
They do a good job.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other famous thing about Singapore that every visitor needs to go to once, besides having a drink at
the Raffles
Sands at the top there, is the Raffles. 100%. Go to the Raffles. Get a bowl of peanuts, throw the shells on the floor and enjoy a Singapore sling, which is where it's from.
Yes.
And it's just a beautiful heritage building as well. It's probably the most you'll ever pay for a drink, but it's worth it for the experience.
Yeah. And I must say, if you want to get to the rooftop of Marina Bay Sands, you can't get to the pool unless you stay there.
That's right.
So the only way you can book a table at one of the bars and you're still on the rooftop, but you don't have that very edge view, or there is a viewing platform as well, which I think you have to buy tickets to go up onto if you're not staying at the hotel.
Some of the cultural and historic neighbourhoods of Singapore is Kampong Glam and Arab Street. Mm-hmm. They're both really colourful, cute terrace kind of houses.
So Haji Lane is in the Kampong Glam, area.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll probably walk straight past it.
Probably.
Yeah. And obviously Chinatown, obviously.
Little India.
And Sentosa Island, of course. We haven't talked about that. There's some theme parks there. Universal Studios are there.
Yeah.
There's a big aquarium there. Cable car rides.
Good place to go.
And all this talk of food, Monique. I'm ready for another page out of the excuse book. But did you cook this weekend?
I have to cook it tonight.
Oh, okay.
Espen wasn't eating on the weekend because he was so ill. And I was avoiding being downstairs because I cannot catch his man flu while I'm pregnant, because I can't take anything to help myself and I am ill.
No cooking.
But I have everything for a Singaporean laksa, which is one of my favorite dishes. Obviously crosses over with Malay cuisine because laksas are also eaten in Malaysia.
Well, they're so close.
Exactly. But it's A, so easy to cook. B, so tasty. see a lot easier to get the ingredients for than something like a Singapore chili crab, which is also something you definitely need to eat if you go to Singapore.
Can you believe we didn't eat Singapore crab because we'd just been on the run the whole time we were in Singapore, and I said to my mum, this is the one thing I need to do is eat chili crab when I'm in Singapore. Mm-hmm. I don't care what else we do. We can do whatever you want.
And you didn't do it.
Went looking for chili crab, but mum wasn't hungry. And the chili crabs are not cheap. The place we were in, which was a renowned place for chili crab, it was going to cost something like $140 per person.
Yeah. And if you're not hungry.
And mum wasn't hungry. So I explained to the waitress, I really want to try chili crab, but mum's not hungry. And she said, well, I can bring you out a bowl of the sauce and some of the crab meat and some bread if you like. I went, yeah. And it was one of the best things I ate the whole trip, but it wasn't the proper chili crab experience.
It does the trick. You still got the flavors. You still got,
it was beautiful.
Yeah. Last year, I actually made some chicken satay from scratch. And when we talk about chicken satay, we're not talking about that gluggy peanut butter crap that you buy from your very westernized local Asian takeout. It's proper, like, spicy, chili, peanut chunk. Oh my God, it is so good. And I had to marinate the chicken overnight in galangal and chili and turmeric and all sorts of things, and then made the satay sauce, which is like it's got chunks of peanut, but then it's chili and coriander and all sorts of things. And Espen loved it because it was one of his favorite dishes when we were in Singapore. But the one that surprised him, because he didn't know much about the food, and he basically, when we got to the hawker center, he was like, I have no idea. You just go and order things and I'll eat it. And the one that really surprised him that he really, really liked was the char kway teow, which is the big, thick, basically wok fried noodles. And they get this kind of caramelization on them from the really hot wok.
Almost black, don't they? They almost go, is that the one?
Yeah. They get like this charred kind of, the big, thick rice noodles. And they, oh my God, it's so good. And he really, really liked that too. So I think if you go to Singapore, or if you're looking for Singaporean cuisine, laksa, Singaporean chicken satay skewers, Singapore chili crab.
Not Singapore noodles, because they don't exist in Singapore.
No.
Just saying.
Exactly. Yet another one of our...
Not a thing. And for anyone listening, we've just introduced a new segment to the podcast of what Espen likes to eat. I hope you feel better from your mad flu soon, Espen.
I find it really fascinating just because he'd never experienced these kinds of foods before, and it's something that is so familiar to us.
But because we were exposed to a lot of different cuisines in Australia just because of the nature of our immigration and how Australia has come to be, our proximity to Asia, of course. And in the north of Australia, far north Queensland and in Darwin,
laksa,
they've got more. That's right. They've got more Asian cuisine up there than any other kind of cuisine. It's renowned.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same hot tropical climate.
Yeah.
There you have it. The other thing I will say about Singapore, actually, is that it's really easy to get around. The metro system is super easy to figure out, and it's cheap and clean, and the whole city is really safe. A really great and easy destination to go to. And like I said, it's just really safe, clean, easy.
Yeah.
A bit hot sometimes, but
yeah. Stay at a place with a pool. And so next week, we're going to the USA, right?
No, next week. Next week is a non-race week.
Oh, come on. The next race is in the USA.
Yes, we're in Austin.
Has Lando Norris won there before?
I don't know. Last year in Austin, it was Charles Leclerc. The year before, it was Max, then cancelled because of COVID, then Valtteri, Kimi Raikkonen, Lewis, Sebastian, Lewis, and then it wasn't held for 3 years between 2008, 2011. 2007 was Lewis, and then we're into the Michael Schumacher era.
So no Lando Norris win there. Cool. When we're back in Austin, and when we're back, Oscar Piastri is going to have his elbows out.
Let's hope.
I reckon.
Yep, he needs to just come out punching and just worry about the consequences after the season. That's what I think he needs to do.
Yeah.
He needs to, well, you know, I don't mean come out punching to the detriment of everything. I mean, he needs to stand up for himself and do what's best for him and his race results. He's done the team thing. They've won their Constructors' Championship now. time to go it alone. Get your elbows out. Look after you.
Yeah.
Go, Oscar.
Yeah. Because Lando is going to be doing that with the backing of his team. And
he's already done it.
Exactly.
He already did it.
Exactly.
I just saw a quote before. Lando saying, he was quoted in a media interview. It was Lando saying, if you're saying that I shouldn't have been going for a gap when there was a gap there, then, you know, I'd no longer be a Formula One.
No, you shouldn't be racing. You shouldn't be a Formula One driver. I saw that too. And that was directed at Oscar, because Oscar was the one that was saying, well, if he's going to crash into me, then he shouldn't have been going for that gap. So that was his retort. His retort was that if you're telling me that I shouldn't have gone for that gap, then you shouldn't be racing in Formula One. We'll be in the USA. And look, if we're going to talk predictions, I basically have the same prediction every week because I'm being very biased and I want to see Oscar just be aggressive and win. So I'm going to say Oscar Max, and then I'm going to put a wild card in there and say that it's going to be Antonelli.
I thought you were going to say Russell. I'm like, you said that last week.
No, exactly.
Antonelli, okay. I want Oscar to win as well. I still think Max is on a charge, and I still think that Max is not giving up. He's saying he was impeded by Lando Norris during qualifying, which is why he didn't get pole position. He said it was a bit hard to, you know, go flat out when there was another car in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, him and Oscar were really good mates, but I don't know if they are anymore. Anyway, I'm going to say Oscar, because that's who I want to win. I always want Oscar to win, and this is his year. I've been saying it all season. This is his year. He needs to take it now. Oscar for the win. Max for second. Charles Leclerc won here last year, and I know I said Charles Leclerc third last time, but I really want to see Ferrari back on the podium, so mm-hmm. I'm going to say Charles again.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why, I just don't see the Ferraris up there, but yeah, good luck to them all.
I live in hope. Yes. Good luck to them all.
If you guys liked what you listened to or watched, you can leave us a comment, a rating, or a review on your favorite podcast listening app or on YouTube. You can also find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and TikTok. Or you can email us at andawaywego f1podcast@gmail.com.
Thank you, Mon. Always fun to talk about Formula One. And thank you, everybody, for having us in your ears. Until next week and until lights out.
Lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.